Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and we are back with Nancy Russell from Snowcloud Alaskan Malamutes. And we are talking about Nancy's experience taking a team of AKC-registered, many champion Alaskan Malamutes and competing in the Iditarod, which I just think is like spine tingling. So how are you this morning, Nancy?
Okay. Well, I think I previously talked about that I met Jamie in 1987, and she's the one, Jamie Nelson, who actually ran the dogs.
Right.
And trained the dogs as well.
Right.
And training was a huge part of it, because when you take show dogs who think that they, quote, are the most important dogs in the world.
Right.
At the moment, and try to put them in a team and change their mentality from show dogs to team dogs. That was her biggest job. I mean, they were all willing to pull. Jamie is one of those people who wants the entire team to trot. She feels it's the most efficient gait, so she didn't allow pacing. But they had to get along, and they had to learn to work to be a team.
Yeah.
And this took her months. She figures that she spent about 3,000 hours training them in the last 2 years before the race.
Wow.
And at the same time, she was training her Alaskan team to run in the Bear Grease race and some of the other shorter distance races in that same year.
Mm-hmm.
So in July of that year, Mark Sapansky, who was a friend and had two Malamutes from me, lived right close to us, gave up his job, up to Jamie to help her to be able to train both teams at the same time, and did everything that needed to be done, from chopping wood to grinding meat to working an Alaskan team, to do a lot of practicing, other teams going past the Malamute team, both from the side, from head on, so that she did not have any confrontations with other dogs.
Wow, right.
If you've been around Malamutes in the years past, we have done quite a bit to bring back or to tone down the aggressiveness in Malamutes. They were a very dog-aggressive dog.
Well, yeah, and they're still a pretty stand-up dog, but that's still, to get them to run in a team and not have, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, that'd be a problem.
Yes, and the other mushers she knew would be very leery of passing a Malamute team.
Right.
Because of their reputation, and so she wanted to make absolutely certain there was not going to be any problems. That was going to be one of the things that would make it necessary for them to allow an all-Malamute team,
right,
to compete in the Iditarod, that there would not be any problems with passing.
And these were all male dogs, right?
There were 5 females and 10 males.
Wow.
All intact.
Wow. That's where I'm going with wow, okay?
Yeah. We did put the females on, I believe it was Ovaman, so
yeah,
they would not come in season.
Right, check drops.
And there was, Mark had one female with spayed, and she did make the team. So we had one spayed female, 4 intact females, and 10 intact dogs. And it was rather interesting, because when I talked to one of the mushers who had started out with a trap line with Alaskan Malamutes, he said, she's crazy. 10 intact dogs.
Yeah, yeah.
On one team.
Yeah.
And then we talked to a guy up in Nome who actually ran freight teams years ago. And this is the first time I'd ever heard that. He said, we neutered all those dogs. He said, we never ran intact males.
Wow.
And I didn't realize that. I knew, well, most mushers did not run females on their team. They ran almost all males on freight teams. And that was the first time I've ever heard that. And he said, we didn't run the females. We kept a few females for breeding. Mm. And we neutered the males, except for whoever we might want to use at stud, he said, and that way we didn't have to deal with the dog aggression problem.
Wow. Yeah, that's fascinating. So Fast forward, you've spent 2 years and 3,000 hours, and you have these dogs ready to go to Alaska and run the toughest, longest, most grueling race in this country. So yes. Talk to me about that. What kind of condition were the dogs in? I mean, you had to change how they were fed and how they were exercised and all of those things. Wow.
The veterinarians on the Iditarod race are special veterinarians that belong to Racing Thing. But in addition to that, they're always doing research projects. And the year that we were there, there were veterinarians from Ohio State University who were doing heart research, in which they did measurements on the dogs and then they did EKGs on them. A lot of the dogs had different kinds of heart murmurs, which are not unusual for high performance animals, period.
Huh.
You know, it's very technical.
Mm-hmm.
I have the results. But anyway, that was what the research was at that particular race. But I think people ought to know that the veterinary care on this race is exceptional. These veterinarians have to be specifically approved for doing not just regular vets, but they're specifically for racing dogs.
Right.
And they're constantly doing research with these dogs. They found out previously that they had needed extra vitamin E in their diet. They also found out that the racing dogs need more zinc from some of these researchers. And they're still today, they're continuing to do research as part of the race.
Wow.
And the mushers all are very willing to participate because it helps their dogs as well as others.
Absolutely. That is very cool. Even I didn't know that. I kind of randomly follow the Iditarod. I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I have EKGs on all the dogs, and a lot of them had heart murmurs. One of them had atrioventricular block.
Wow.
And he said, don't worry. He said, that's commonly found in high-performance racehorses as well as racing dogs.
That's kind of bizarre.
And if I'd gone to my normal vet and he found it, he'd had a fit.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting.
No.
Interesting.
Yeah. One of her other biggest problems was the fact that they were show dogs. And so they had this mentality that, you know, I'm wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She had a terrible time getting them past people with cameras. And one of the vets came up to us in a restaurant after the race, and he was laughing. He said, are you the Malamute people? And we said, yes. And he said, I got to tell you this story. He said, I was a vet at, I think he was Cripple Creek.
Mm.
He said, I wanted to go over and see how the Malamutes work. So I was just interested in them. And he said, I walked over to the head of the team, and I was looking. They were all kind of lounging around and laying down because Jamie had fed them and stuff. And he said, I put my hand in my pocket, and the whole team jumped up and wagged their tails. And he said, it took me a few minutes to realize, oh my gosh, these are show dogs, and they thought I had bait in my pocket.
Oh my God, now that is funny.
So they didn't forget everything about being show dogs. They remembered cameras and they remembered bait in the pocket.
Well, and I love that idea that, you know, a show dog is not a team event, right? That's all about that one dog standing out. And making a dog go from I am the coolest to teamwork, I would, again, never have even crossed my mind that that would be a huge issue.
That was a huge issue for her. It really was. In fact, after the first year, I took two dogs back to my place in the summer and put them in the show ring and finished their championships and sent them back to her. And she said, we're not doing this again.
Right.
She said, I had to completely retrain their attitude into, you are a team dog, you are not a show dog, you are not the most wonderful dog in my kennel. You are a part of the team.
What a fascinating concept. Okay.
Yeah, it was something I hadn't even thought about because I've...
Right.
But that was a big challenge for her.
Interesting. Okay, and now the Iditarod itself is 2,000 some odd miles, correct?
1,050-something.
Okay.
It depends on whether you're going the northern route or the southern route, but it's just over 1,000 miles.
Okay.
They call it 1,049, but it varies a few miles each year.
Okay.
Also, depending on where the trail goes. Back then, the trail was still not a national trail as it is today.
Mm.
So if the weather or the, you know, a tree fell down or,
right.
You know, a glacier moved or whatever it was, they had to changed the trail, and of course that did change it a few miles, but basically it's a little over 1,000 miles. And at that time, when I originally got enthused about doing it with Malmutes, was 1,000 miles with 4 checkpoints. So that means they had to carry their gear for camping and food or hunt along the way. And the first Iditarod took them over 20 days. I think it was 22 or 23 days to finish.
Right.
That would have been much more conducive to Malmutes.
Right.
And that, in 1994, Martin Boozer won it in 10 days. And when you think that they're traveling over 1,000 miles in 10 days, now they're down to 9.
Yeah.
And they are required to take a 24-hour. They must stop for 24 hours somewhere along the trail. They have to stop for 8 hours at another checkpoint and 8 hours at White Mountain, plus whatever they must stop just for the
right
in order for the dogs to rest. So those dogs are really moving pretty fast when they move.
Yeah.
The ones that are running it today. So by the time that I got somebody who would run the dogs and we could do this, we knew we were in no way competitive. We just wanted to see if the dogs could still, you know, maintain their ability to go across to Alaska and survive in the Arctic. And we did. I mean, they didn't go the whole race. They went 657 miles. They actually gained weight on the race because they got snacked along the way. And they didn't want any straw. Nobody had to wear coats or anything like that. And Jamie said, we'll put the straw down, and they would push it out of the way and lay in the snow. So they didn't need the... They still survived in the Arctic environment, you know, without any problems other than their feet. And that was what took them.
Right. How did their feet do? Did you put boots on them, or did they run naked?
Well, the first part of the... I think she booted like 4 or 5 dogs at the beginning of the race that had previously had some problems. The snow conditions, it was very unfortunate for us that all of a sudden the temperature went up to the point where they had overflow on the rivers.
Mm.
And so there were 2 different rivers that they went through where they were actually in water for an hour.
Mm.
And both of those places, I believe, there were Alaskan teams that wouldn't go in. But the Malmutes did. Jamie is a wonderful trainer. And so the dogs do what she tells them to do.
Right.
And they went through the overflow, and then the Alaskan teams followed them. And then the Alaskan teams passed them and went on. And that happened at 2 different places where they had deep water, which I'm sure didn't help their feet any. So then she did boot them after some of those places, but they still did have some foot problems. Not the entire team, but enough of the team so that they were starting to have snowballing problems by the time they got to Ruby.
Okay.
And I think the oil had been probably drained out of the feet, so to speak, from being in water for that long. And that would probably contribute to the snowballing problem.
Mm.
We tried everything to figure out why some of the dogs had foot problems and some did not. And we did not come to any conclusions other than possibly not enough oil in their diet, strange snow conditions. And Jamie felt that maybe their feet were not big enough for the size of the dogs.
Interesting.
And I must say that the dogs years ago had much bigger feet, like snowshoes. That's what our standard says, snowshoe foot. But you know, in the chauffeuring, a snowshoe foot doesn't look very nice.
Right.
You know?
Interesting.
And it's because it spreads out when the weight comes down on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do feel that today people are breeding smaller, tighter feet.
Because they're pretty.
Because they're pretty. And not because they're functional. So
Very interesting. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute. All right, crew. Last month, I was filling you in on the Trupanion Breeder Support Program. And in case you missed it, this is a free program for breeders that lets us offer our buyers, our puppy buyers, a go-home day offer so that they can try out Trupanion and everybody has the peace of mind that that puppy is covered in case of any kind of an incident. But I was talking to Haran recently, and I didn't realize at the time that they actually have a breeding rider that is additional to the regular healthcare coverage that Trupanion offers our dogs. And so I wanted to bring Haran Greer from Trupanion back to tell us about it, because I was blown away. So welcome, Haran.
Thanks, Laura. Thanks for having me back. And I'm happy this came up in conversation.
Yeah, right? So tell us about it. This is pretty incredible to me.
Yeah, so I'll just start at the basics. You know, so if you join Trupanion, we just have one simple plan. It's 90% coverage for the unexpected illnesses, accidents, and injuries. And then from there, breeders can add a breeding rider coverage to make sure that they're protected from the unexpected things that can happen with breeding.
Okay, so what does that cover? What kind of things are you covering in your claims with the breeding rider?
So it's truly things that are unexpected. So anything that you can't plan for in advance is what Trupanion gives you peace of mind from, right? But with the breeding rider, you know, the most common claim that we see are for C-section.
Mm-hmm.
But as I was looking through, I was curious just to see what kind of claims we have been seeing in the past year. I was surprised that pyometra payouts have exceeded what we've paid out for C-section.
Wow.
So the claims paid ranged from the lowest one that we paid out was $1,740, and the highest one to date this year has been $5,500.
That's pretty incredible. So how much does a person pay to add that breeding rider to their regular insurance coverage?
So that rider has variables. You'll want to give us a call or go to our website. The factors are things like where you live, what breed you have, is it a male or female, how old are they, and then the deductible. And those
right.
deductible options is where, you know, the flexibility comes in
mm-hmm.
for your monthly payment. And those range from $0 to $1,000.
Okay, beautiful. So check it out, listeners, puredogtalk.com. You can find the Trupanion website. Just click that logo and it will take you in to get lots and lots of information about some stuff that I think not all of us always think about. So thank you, Haran. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, Laura. I hope to be back on soon.
I read a newspaper account or something like that, and one of the things it mentioned was that the native people were really excited to see the Malamutes.
Yes, they were. That was one of the real pluses, was that when they got to the Eskimo villages, in one of them, the school teachers, they let the kids all come out of school to see the Malamutes.
Oh.
Yep. And Jamie said she had one elderly Eskimo gentleman bring his grandkids down. He said, "You have to come and see these dogs. This is what we used to have."
Mm.
And then when she ran the Iditarod again in 2000, and she got out to the coast where there's to Unalaklik and I think Shattuck, which are both Eskimo villages. She said they came to her and said, "Oh, we are so disappointed. We were hoping you'd bring the Malamutes out here."
Oh my gosh. I mean, that's really amazing. And so did you go? I mean, obviously Jamie was running the team, but you went to Alaska, right? And drove along or
oh, yeah.
met her at the checkpoints or whatever?
Yes. Well, Jamie flew to Alaska because she had run the Bear Grease race. And not only she ran it with the Alaskan team in the 500-mile race, she ran the Malamutes in the 100-mile race. And then after that, she got pneumonia. So she flew to Alaska to kind of check out the trails. And Mark Sapansky and Jan Richards, who, again, I must mention Jan because we never could have run this race without her. She took off 6 months from her teaching career and went up to Jamie's, brought her Malamute team up there, both Malamutes and Alaskans, so that there was another team to pass.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she did the organizational stuff, and we're talking a lot of it. I mean, we often had to have the booties and the dog food, and we were trying to, I didn't have any big commercial sponsors, but we did a lot of publicity with the purebred dog people,
mm-hmm.
and we sold certificates. You could buy a mile for $40, and we did a newsletter to all the people who sponsored us, and Jan did all of that,
wow.
most of it. So Jan Richards and Mark Sapansky and I and Jamie's husband did the driving, and we drove the dog truck with the trailer with all the gear in it up to Alaska from Togo, Minnesota. Took us 8 days.
I was going to say, that's a long drive. I was going to ask about that. I mean, I drive across country. You know, a lot of us are familiar driving across country with show dogs, right? And you have X-Bens and crates. And it's even with the field trial dogs that I do, you have your stakeout chains and all this. But you had, what, 30 dogs? And crazy.
Well, no, we actually had, by that time, Jamie had chosen the team and we had 15 dogs.
Okay.
We had 15 dogs in the truck, but we had to build new dog boxes because her Alaskan dog boxes weren't big enough for the Malamutes. So Mark and Ken did that, built new dog boxes to fit the Malamutes,
right.
and then pulled the gear in the trailer. And it started out at 20 below zero, and it never went above 20 below zero all the way to Alaska.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
So you're not leash walking these 15 Malamutes each time you stop, and it's 20 below zero, so you can't pound a peg to put them on a stakeout. How do you, what, oh, my.
Well, actually, you have what they call outriggers. And it's a pipe that pulls out from the back of the truck and the front of the truck on each side, and you run a chain across with drop chains on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you take out one side, you know, before you put the drop chains on, and then you hook them all on, and then you do the other side. And the dogs become so accustomed to going, just like our show dogs go in an X-Pen, you know. They become so accustomed to going that by the time you get all 15 of them dropped and clean up, it's time to put them back in.
Yeah. We do similar things with the field trial dogs, but I was thinking you had to have some way to attach them to the vehicles because you couldn't get a stakeout into the ground if it's 20 below.
No, no, and we couldn't carry enough X-Pens.
No, God, Lord, no.
So, and they're used to being staked out anyway, so that worked very well. It was cold.
Yeah, that's a long, cold trip. So 20 below for 8 days from Minnesota to Alaska. Wow.
One night, it got too late, and it was really getting dark, and there was no place. I mean, there are areas, you know, especially going up to Alaska, where there just isn't anybody.
Right.
And finally, we came to a tiny town, and there was a motel, and we drove in, and there was a sign on the door saying, just pick whatever cabin you want and pay in the morning.
Mm.
So we did. However, the door kept blowing open, so Ken had to put his knife in the door to hold it shut.
Oh, my God.
There was no heat. There was some hot water. We slept with our clothes on, including our scarf and caps.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it was still 20 below.
In the cabin. Oh, my gosh.
So, anyway, the next morning we got up. I couldn't believe. I mean, they charged us a regular rate for this supposed motel.
Oh, my
God. But anyway.
Wow.
It taught us to stop earlier.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So you ran the race. You ran 600, a little over half of the race. And what was it at the end? Was it the feet that you finally said, okay, we're going to have to call it a day here?
Yeah, actually it was. It was totally the feet. The dogs actually were in excellent condition. They actually gained weight on the race. And Jamie said they would have gone on. She wrote a statement afterwards for us and for the publicity. And she said, I knew they would go on, even though their feet were snowballing. If I put their booties on, they swelled. But she said, I was not going to break their trust in me. They trusted me to do what was right for them. And she said, I wouldn't make them go on when they were hurting, just in order to finish a race.
Right.
And to me, that tells you what a wonderful person she is. And I think it also says something for the mushers, because I feel that all of the mushers on that race, or most of them, feel that same way about the dogs. They would not do anything to hurt their dogs.
Right.
Or to break the trust that the dogs have in them, because those dogs trust that what the musher says, go through this overflow, go down this gorge, go up this steep hill, and you're going to be okay.
Right.
And they trust them. And if you break that trust, you're not going to have a team that's going to work for you. And that was, she said, was what made the decision. She said, they would have gone to Nome if I had said, you have to do it.
Right.
Because, you know, that's what they were trained to do. They were trained to pull until they died in harness.
Right.
As a dog of the Eskimos.
Right.
And she said, I know they would have done it, but I couldn't break that trust and I wouldn't make them do something where they were hurting. So she pulled them at Ruby 640 miles into the race.
Wow. Pretty amazing adventure.
Yes, it was. Yep. And I think, I feel, you know, that we proved the Malamute hadn't lost its ability to do what it was bred to do. And that was live in Alaska. The cold didn't bother them. They went through all the different snow conditions. You know, they did their job. And they came back and finished four more of them after that as champions. So 11 of the 15 became champions. And the other four didn't, well, one was spayed, so I couldn't have finished her. And the other three, one of them belonged to Jan, and she didn't want to. He was her lead dog.
Mm, right.
And so he went back on her team. He was also a leader backup leader in the Iditarod race. And then we lost Barney and Jericho. We lost them before I got him finished.
Okay.
Barney only needed one major to finish when we lost him to a rare blood disease.
Mm.
Oh, I know. Hemolytic anemia.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I really, really, really appreciate your time, Nancy, and talking to us about this. I think that on this show, we talk a lot about preservation breeders and really bred on purpose for a purpose. And I cannot think of a story that is more ideal to talk about that. So thank you very much for your time.
Okay. We had a great support from the purebred dog world. I just got them out this morning. I got a whole envelope of letters from people, not some of them in our breed, but so many of them in different breeds saying, well, what a wonderful thing to do, you know, to show that our purebred dogs can still go back and do what they were bred to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And we actually had really wonderful support from the entire purebred dog community.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Nancy. I appreciate your time tremendously.
Well, it was fun. I hope people will enjoy it. I enjoyed going back and reviewing all these things, you know.
Good memories for you. There you go.
We're talking 24 years ago.
Right? Wow. Thanks a lot, honey. You have a great day, all right?
Okay.
And now a quick tip from our friends at American Dog Fancier. ADF says, always qualify any statistics that you're using in an advertisement. Date and the system are the best way to do that. Second note, always remember to include photo credits. Thank you from American Dog Fancier. Affordable show dog advertising. Mention Pure Dog Talk and get 10% off your first ad with American Dog Fancier. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our dog show superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the super's desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.